Hello, Space Junkies, and welcome to What a Piece of Junk, the Star Wars podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. This is episode 120 and another very special gaming-focused episode as we look at a supposedly leaked version of the Quick Start rules for the upcoming Star Wars Unlimited card game from Fantasy Flight Games. Joining with me to talk about this is my original Wookiee co-pilot, our very own Dave Filcloney, the man of a thousand nicknames, Mr. Nathan Miracle. Nathan, what's up?
I am doing great. I just got back from your neck of the woods where I was playing Marvel Crisis Protocol, and that has nothing to do with Star Wars, so I won't talk too much about that, but had a great time. Back home now to talk a little Star Wars.
Yes, and so also because we're talking about card games again, we have your favorite card expert and mine, Mr. Sugi. Sugi, welcome back to the Drunken Gungan.
I don't have a problem. You have a problem. I could stop anytime I want.
I just don't want to stop.
No, I don't want to stop. I
just don't want to stop.
I've got cards in my hand and I'm ready to beat you with them.
That's right. And we don't want to stop talking about Star Wars Unlimited. And thanks to a leak or perhaps a orchestrated marketing campaign, we don't have to stop talking about Unlimited, even though there wasn't an official article posted this week, nor press release or live stream or anything like that. But we did get over on Reddit a leak of a PDF of the entire Star Wars Unlimited Quick Start rules that ostensibly will come in, as we have just learned from these documents, a two-player starter set that features Darth Vader facing off against Luke Skywalker. And so, guys, we have so many things that we asked about on last week's episode of the podcast have officially been answered. First and foremost for me was there is going to be a starter, so I can finally put that chestnut to rest and not have to worry about, am I just going to have to buy booster pack after booster pack and hope that I get lucky? No. Nathan, are you happy that we know there are officially going to be at least one two-player starter that's Luke versus Vader?
Yes, I am, because the first game that I play of this game, I want to take that two-player starter, break it open, and sit down at my table and play against myself. That's what I always used to do with the Star Wars CCG that Decipher made back in the 90s. So that's what I plan to do with this first game, me versus me, pretending I don't know what's in my own other hand. Then I'll play against you.
I was about to say, I was kind of hoping that you were about to say first game would be me against Scott, but okay.
No. Because you live far enough away that I can play the game on the way to your house. That might be bad while driving, but, you know,
yeah, don't do details. That if you're driving.
Don't listen to this man, folks. Ladies and gentlemen, very dangerous.
No. Sugi,
we're not look if I get a self-driving vehicle, then I'm just from the future. Maybe between Sugi, now and 2024.
Are you happy that we know for sure there's going to be this two-player starter?
Sure. When you say FFG, I immediately think there's a starter. I cannot think of a game with trading card games that they've done, even with LCGs, where there wasn't some sort of starter. So if you say FFG and card game, it's like, where's the starter at? Where can I get some of these?
Yeah. Sometimes it's called a core box, but it's still really a starter.
It's a starter. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the starter box. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Cool. Okay. Well, so guys, we got a lot of things correct on last episode of the podcast. So let's go around the horn here and talk about what we correctly predicted. I'll start with myself. I'm going to say that I correctly predicted, or at least wished for, the way that resource cards work. I was all like, please don't let there be lands or any kind of specific thing that is a resource, and there's not. You get to take any card from your hand and put it face down into your sort of resource row as a resource that you use. Interestingly, you'd get to put two of those into play face down during the setup of the game after you draw your opening hand, and then the rest of the game, you're going to put one down during the end, basically at the end of the turn in the regroup phase. So that's pretty cool. I was happy I was correct about that, and I'm very thankful to FFG for setting it up that way rather than making me have to lose various games because I couldn't find enough locations to put into play or whatever. Yes, I ran out of Jawa camps. That's the only reason you won, Nathan.
you know, I have seen it happen. Not Jawa Camp specifically, but I have definitely seen. I didn't get enough resources. I didn't draw enough locations in the Star Wars CCG. I didn't have enough lightsaber icons, or I didn't roll enough resource dice in Destiny.
Don't even tell me about that one.
Yeah, that was always a pain.
All right, we're going to try not to run on for 2 hours this episode like we did last time, guys. So, Sugi, what were you correct about? And you know, take your victory lap.
I was correct about aggression. Haha, that I didn't know anything about. No, just kidding. So my big thing was we knew that this was a very similar game from Star Wars Destiny. And so we were speculating about how do you determine who goes first in subsequent rounds. And so my guesstimate was there was going to be an action or some way where you take a card or token the base and you declare, hey, I am first in the next round, but I pass all actions in the rest of this. You can do whatever you want. And basically there's a literal action that says you take the first token or first player token, your opponent does whatever they want, and you pass all actions indefinitely. So it's quite literally like Star Wars Destiny. The only difference is there is not currently at this point in time any kind of special bonus or ability you get for taking that first player token. In Star Wars Destiny, you had a little base card that was sitting in the middle, and whoever took that base card would get some kind of special a bonus. Maybe you drew a card, or you healed a damage, or you got a resource or something. This game is just take the action, you go first, you're done. That's it.
I fully expect there'll be cards that say, though, you know, if you do this while you have the initiative, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Or even if this is in play, when you take the initiative, do this or gain this.
Yeah.
It's possible. I feel like they're trying to take the initiative be a little simpler. So there's once both players start to get low on options, there's an interesting tension because you might have a character that, say, you know, like deals a damage and does something else. So you have to look at that and go, do I want to deal one damage, which isn't a lot, and maybe use this ability, or do I want to guarantee I go first in the next round, which means all of my stuff gets untapped. I get the first thing, which could mean, you know, I really need this this Yoda to activate first so that I can heal my base. So that puts my opponent out of range of instantly killing me. Or maybe I need to go first so I can play this removal spell that will kill off their Vader or whatever threat you're staring down that could cost you the game. So, you know, there's a lot of jockeying, and I think adding more things to take the initiative to incentivize it might make the game less interesting, because the deeper you are in the action phase, the more tense it becomes on when should I take the initiative. Because early on, like, you're never going to just immediately take the initiative. You're going to play cards, attack, do stuff. But the deeper you go, then that tension starts to rise on, maybe I play a card or maybe I go first. And over subsequent rounds, you're going to win or lose based off of correctly or incorrectly taking the initiative, just like Destiny.
Yeah.
If you overextend or underextend too much, you'll lose games super fast.
Yeah. Nathan. Take your victory lap, sir. Rest on your laurels, as it were.
Well, I'm going to bring up two things. One is we talked about experience tokens. We had seen that on the Rebel Wing Leader. And we talked about a few possibilities, but we settled on the most likely possibility being a simple plus one token. And that was 100% correct. That is exactly what they are. The other thing that I predicted
for that card.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it does cost 3. So we knew it had to do something important to be a 2-1 that costs 3.
Yeah, turn your other thing and turn Leia into a 4-4, please.
Yeah, which then, you know, she could be ready, so she could go ahead and attack. But getting too much into that. The other big thing that I got right is that you can play things that don't match your leader or your base in terms of aspect at a penalty. Now, I thought that penalty might be like one resource. Turns out that it's 2 per aspect that you don't have. So sometimes that means paying 4 extra. But the reason I predicted that is they talked a lot about limited formats and draft formats. And I felt like it was likely that every card is legal in every deck. so that you can make a 50 card deck out of whatever you get, but you're still going to want to gear your deck towards your leader or your base. So big penalties for not doing the right thing. In Constructed, I think you'll practically never take an out of aspect card.
Unless there's some super duper awesome combo.
It would have to be an epic combo to justify. I'm
willing to bet there's going to be cards you take. Otherwise, the restriction wouldn't be as penalizing as it is.
There'll be some cards that you might want to take, but at that penalty, it's going to take an almost broken card. But it's FFG, so...
Shocking.
I'm going to put Princess Leia in my Darth Vader deck because raw.
For four? No.
I'm going to put Princess Leia in my Darth Vader deck just so I can put her as a resource and have Darth Vader be like, go to your room.
My room was on Alderaan. My room was on Alderaan. Okay. All right. Cool. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the setup of the game. Needless to say, we're not going to go through every single page of the quick start rules on this episode of the podcast because we'd be here for days, maybe not days, but a while. So we're really just going to sort of talk about the first one third, maybe half as it were, and talk about the rest of the stuff on a future episode of the podcast. So setup phase works like this in the quick start rules, gentlemen. That page, it lays it out to us and says, in order to do the whole setup of the game, first you're going to take all the token cards and your base and your leader and pull them aside, then shuffle the rest of the cards. Put your base into, yes, 50 of them, right? Put your base into play facing your opponents. Put your leader into play below your base, horizontal, that is non-unit side, face up. So Luke and Vader start on their quote-unquote front sides where they're horizontal. Randomly determine, roll dice, I suppose, which player starts the game with the initiative and give the initiative counter to that player. Then you shuffle your deck and draw six cards to form your starting hand. You do get a mulligan in Star Wars Unlimited, and it is a full-on mulligan. You have to take all six cards, shuffle them back in, and draw six new ones.
The worst kind of mulligan, by the way.
Yes, because you could end up with the exact same six cards. If things really go badly for you.
Worse cards.
True.
If you're sitting there going, I've got five cards I don't care about because they're all cost five or six. And that one card that I do care about, is it worth throwing away the one card?
I wish they had the French mulligan like Lorcana. That is so good.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, after you do your mulligan or not, you must keep your new hand. And then you choose two cards from that starting hand of six to put face down as your starting resources. So you put them face down near your base. They are now resources, and you will use them to pay for cards to play during the game. So, guys, how are you thinking you are going to make your determinations about which two cards from your sixth starting hand you're going to put face down as your starting resources? Sugi, what are your thoughts about that idea, that determination?
Okay, so the starter quick start rules have a great tip. They quote, recommend taking a mulligan if your hand contains no units that cost one or two to play on the first round. So this goes into card game tempo. So if it is turn one, you want to be on tempo or on curve by playing something immediately and not playing anything. So for example, if I play something and you don't, then you're off tempo because I've got stuff, you don't, and now I can start using my stuff, and you have to catch up. So you always want to make sure when you're building that deck, you have this curve from characters and things that do one, two, three, four, five. So that way, if you build your deck appropriately, you should be able to play things on turn one, and then turn two, and then turn three. So you never miss out on that tempo, because the moment you do, your opponent instantly has an advantage. And you don't want to give advantages in this game. This is going to be, it's very interesting. It's not as mechanically complex as as difficult as a game like Flesh and Blood. But what's interesting is this game is going to be a game of micromanaging incremental advantages and overcoming incremental disadvantages because you go back and forth so frequently with actions like I play a card, you play a card, I attack with a card. You play a event. I play a character. You attack with your character. I pass. You pass. Oh, nuts. You had the initiative token, so now you get to go first. I shouldn't have done that. I should have done something else. And so on and so forth. So it's a very, very... it's not unique because we've seen this in Star Wars Destiny, but it's unique for a lot of people who haven't played because early game, they're going to, by accident, misallocate action economy, and they're going to get caught off guard. And so the more you play, the better you get. But when you're working on the starting hand, you really want to make sure that you send the cards that you cannot play with high resource value into your resource pile, and you keep the low-cost cards and try and set yourself up for a good turn 1, 2, and 3 play.
Yeah. Nathan, do you agree with that, or you have something to add for your determination as to which cards in your starting hand will be your resources?
Yeah, I largely agree with that. You do want to make sure that you're on curve, and for that reason, I'd recommend looking at duplicates of your curve. So if I've got 2 3 cost cards, I can't play them both on turn 2. So that might, and if I got a 4 cost card, you know, that I don't really want to play the other three cost card on turn 3 because you're always one ahead on resources compared to your turn number. So I might take one of the 3 costs and make that a resource because I've got a duplicate on the curve. Other than that, when I'm building the deck, I probably have an idea in mind of how do I want to win. You know, am I going for a ground win? Am I going for a space win? Like, what are my key cards? So if I've got a card that I know, you know, this is the card that takes me to victory, that card I'm going to set aside and will almost never be a resource.
Yeah.
Like, do not bench that card. Do not put that as a resource. I'm going to have...
Coach, I'm ready to play.
I'm going to have a list of cards in my head. I'm like, this is never going to be a resource.
Yeah. Unless it's like you're going to lose the game if you don't play this other card, have bombs in your hand that are allocated as play this as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's something you should determine before you even sit down.
Yeah, for me, I have a crazy idea about an answer to this question about what becomes a resource. I'm thinking that. So we know that Luke and Vader are ground leaders, and I'm thinking that there will be space leaders, and I'm wanting to like have enough strategic idea that, okay, my opponent has revealed a space leader. That means I should lean into ground because he's probably got a lot of things happening in space. If nothing else, he'll have a really big space unit on the turn that he gets to do his epic action to bring out his space unit leader. So what if I tailor my starting hand decision of which cards go face down to avoid the one arena where my opponent has his leader, because I get to see that during setup.
I wouldn't worry about that because you're going to go off curve.
There's also a danger in that because if I've got Darth Vader, that's a really powerful ground unit. Mm-hmm. That might be the only ground unit I really run because he's going to take care of ground, or at least be a threat there. He can take care of it enough that my deck can focus on space. So I don't think you can look at your opponent's leader and necessarily know, oh, they've got a ground leader, so they must be going ground. That could be covering the weakness of their draw deck. You know, I did this to you in, there was a Marvel card game where you had 3 heroes and you put 2 heroes in between them each round face down. I forgot the name of it, but each hero had a speed, physical attack, and mental toughness.
It was Marvel Superhero Squad.
Yeah.
No. It was before Superhero Squad. Because it wasn't the little chibi guys. And this game lasted all of like 2 months. We found it at Dragon Con once, but I broke the game. Because I figured out if I run 3 heroes that all have really high physical attack, and then all of the cards in my deck all had really high mental attack, then wherever you attacked, I would either let the attack go through as physical or block with mental, depending on how you attacked.
Marvel Ultimate Battles.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Boy, that card game was terrible.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Yeah, was it was bad. It was bad.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, I pretty much broke it because I realized all you have to do is have your three starting heroes go one way and your deck go the exact opposite way, and you can always defend whichever way you're going to win.
Yeah.
And at some point, I hadn't explained to Scott that I was doing this, and he was like, I attack Venom with mental because Venom's really low mental. I'm like, I block with Mr. Fantastic. It's like, someday you're going to have somebody who's not high mental for your defenders. I'm like, no, I'm not.
Little does he know.
I have not built the deck to do that. So I might lure you into the same trap. Oh, he's got Vader. He's going to go ground. Nope. All space. You
know, I could see decks. I'm going to predict right now. We're going to see decks that facilitate one specific type. So ground only. Or space only, or maybe they'll be like 99% space with like one or two things that can potentially deal with ground, but you're turning the game into a base. It's going to be an aggro deck. So it's, hey, most people in this current meta are playing hybrid decks where they're trying to be good at both ground and space. So this deck is going to have the best space cards possibly available with the most damage and the lowest cost. And so all of your ground units, I don't care one bit because they can't hurt my space units. And so if you're playing a hybrid list, I'm going to beat you in the space race. The question is, can your ground units compensate for my speed? And that's when it turns into, you know, who's got a better deck, who's a better pilot, who draws better. But you can potentially take away one of the interaction points of the game just by saying, screw it, I'm all ground. I'm assuming there's going to be more ground than space units just based off of Star Wars as a whole. So it might be harder for people to do. Like, until we get to like a year to 2 years deep, I suspect FFG is going to limit the space unit capacity and focus heavily on ground. But then there'll probably be a future set that's like really heavy on space. But over the course of the lifespan of the game, I could see aggro decks going one direction full tilt. Mm-hmm.
I wonder if, like the old Decipher CCG with Battle Order and Battle Plan, are they going to make cards that will punish you if you're weak in one or the other arena?
No. I think probably not directly. There will be some cards that are better if your opponent doesn't have anything there. Mm-hmm. But, well, like Stormtrooper, we see in these rules is three attack and one health. If you're not going ground at all,
for one.
Yeah. If you're not going ground at all, it's very punishing that you can't get rid of that guy because he's all in on attack. So he doesn't
feel bad if your first card is like an X-Wing and they play a Stormtrooper. You're like, that's bad.
Yeah. Yeah. But so in that sense, yes, there are cards that will punish you for going all one way or the other. But at the same time, you know, if I build my deck with 50 Stormtroopers and just go ground, I'm cheating. Because that's why they have a limit of three, so that you can't do stuff like that.
And I would once again like to point out, this is specifically Death Star Stormtrooper. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we got to stop saying, oh, I'll play a bunch of Stormtroopers. Well, yes, but which kind?
It's true. I might play Stormtroopers. And there could be Officer Stormtroopers with the green aspect. But we'll talk a little bit more about aspects in a little bit.
Snowtroopers. Yeah. Can't hit the broadside of a barn troopers.
Yeah, those guys.
Troopers Biker Scout troopers who can hit the broadside of a barn, just not with a blaster.
American with troopers, their bike. British troopers.
Yes. It's quite a bit sunny today, Trooper. So he has sunglasses on.
Beach trooper. Yeah,
beach trooper.
Hot tub trooper. Okay, yeah. So
can I get anyway?
Lego trooper.
Yeah.
Oh, Lego trooper. Lego oh, trooper. Dude, I want to make don't my own that. Promo cards that have the Lego as
just
the
all Legos. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, they said alternate images.
They didn't say what kind. All right. So moving on. So that's a good talk about setup. So you got all that stuff down. You're good to go. So guys, let's talk about how do resources work. Nathan and Suki, you've both hinted around the idea of playing a resource card once per turn is not a revolutionary concept in card games. However, doing it at the end of the turn, which is what we have here in Star Wars Unlimited, is a bit revolutionary, or at least a little out of the ordinary. Nathan, what are your thoughts about that and how it affects the ubiquitous mana curve discussion that certain people will be having about this game?
Well, in a sense, it doesn't, other than the fact that you start at two instead of one. Normally you start at zero, but then you gain your first one at the start of your first turn. This time you start at two and you gain one at the end of the turn. But you know, the end of one turn or the beginning of another turn, I mean, they're right next to each other. So it's almost like starting at two and gaining one at the start of each turn, in a sense. What surprises me a little bit is that it's not an action to do it. In a game that's all about passing actions back and forth, I thought it might be an interesting idea that's a once per round action to set up your resource.
I mean, if you think about it,
but they didn't go that way. I can see, Sugi, that you don't like that idea, but they didn't go that way. So you're right.
That is an awful game design.
Well, from a Destiny standpoint, when you claim resource dice, that's an action.
Yeah, but you're rolling the dice to see what happens. And then if you get said action, that doesn't mean you want that resource. In this game, you have to have a means to play resources. So if it was an action, let's be honest, the first action of every turn would be who goes first. Card is a resource. Pass to Nathan. Also, my first action, card is a resource.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was expecting.
So it's basically worthless.
So yeah, so they basically just cut it out by saying, nope, this is just something that happens at the end of the turn.
Yeah.
Also, by putting it at the end of the turn, they made it to where you didn't have to have it come in exhausted or something like that. To make sure it waits until next turn to get used.
Right. Why am I thinking that it does actually come into play exhausted and then you ready it?
You're thinking of characters.
Yes.
Well,
it literally
doesn't matter because in the resource phase, you draw two cards, you bench a card, untap everything, go. So there's no
point. You're right. I'm thinking of units. You're right.
Yeah. The orientation of your resources never matters because you'll always start with everything untapped.
Right.
Now, I can see there's probably ramp in the game. Those cards are probably going to be tapped when they come into play. So you'll probably have a character that says, you know, when you play this character, take the top card of your deck, put it into your resource zone, tapped. Just like Magic. Just like Lorcana, just like the Wild TCG did that as well. So you're able to ramp out your resources, but you don't necessarily get to control what it is. Generally, it's just the top card of your deck. You get to look at it and go, oh, okay, cool, that's what that is. But you get one resource ahead of your opponent. But normally it's going to be sideways, unless there's some kind of really special effect, which makes Leia interesting because I'm assuming that there's going to be means to ramp, which means you can play her and then untap a land or a resource, whatever you want to call it. But what's interesting is since they're face down and everything is essentially colorless, there's no colored resource usage. Everything is unanimously one resource or two resources or whatever. So there's no need for dual lands. There's no need for, you know, a green blue or a red black or whatever. Everything just taps for one resource. But that also means there's probably no cards that tap for two, like we've seen in Magic. Everything just taps for one flat rate. Unless there's like an item, or I could see there's like items or something you play on the table. You could tap those for multiple resources, but it's probably unique. So you only get one, like an artifact from Magic.
Although that would have to be a unit of some kind, because the only card types we have are unit, event, and upgrade.
I could see that there's another type of card that is going to be revealed in future sets.
Well, in future sets, I could see there being just a straight up resource card type that goes face up instead of face down. That you don't necessarily have to put in your deck, but you could. I could also see, you know, Yoda has a win defeated trigger. So I could see a card that doesn't have quite as good of stats for the cost, but has a win defeated becomes an exhausted resource.
Yeah.
That is not uncommon in games of this nature.
Right.
So you get value of a body and then it turns into ramp.
Mm-hmm. Now do note that when it comes to putting a card face down as a resource during the regroup phase, it is optional. You can put up to one card down. So I'm wondering if we'll have decks that are trying to win so fast that they're like, I go to three or maybe four resources and that's all I ever have. And I'm just playing a bunch of really cheap stuff over and over and over.
That we've seen aggro decks do that in many, many games where your mana curve is like four. And so everything in your deck costs four less. And so you just play stuff, attack as fast as you can. If something dies, you replenish it, rinse, repeat.
Well, thinking about, you know, if there weren't the limit, the Death Star Stormtrooper deck would do that. You would go to three and then just every turn, I draw two more Stormtroopers and play them. So if there's enough one cost stuff in the aggro aspect, it's possible to build a deck that way. But there again, there's a reason there's a limit of three cards to avoid that type of thing.
So let's
we're going to see an aggro deck just like that, where the top end is like three or four, and everything in that deck is just like a one drop, 3/1, a two drop, 5/1. Like you're just weak in the butt. You're glass cannon. But if you can survive and your opponent can't touch you, you just get so much value out of your attacks onto the base.
Yeah. Okay. Well, speaking of resources and different aspects and, you know, various strategy there, let's talk about the six aspects. So we now have names for all six of the aspects or colors of the cards that we've seen so far. The bluish one that has the little wave of two suns that we see on Luke Skywalker's card is Vigilance. The red one that looks like a targeting reticule is Aggression, like we saw on Darth Vader. The gold bird of the galaxy looking one that we've seen on Luke and Leia is Heroism. The green one that looks like a little modified Death Star is that we saw on Tarkin is Command. The orange, or perhaps we call it yellow, one that we also saw on Leia that looks like a planet with some rings around it is Cunning. And then the black one that has almost like a little Imperial badge of rank on it is Villainy. So I like that there's villainy and heroism as aspects. But of course that begs the question of, you know, we can see people that we consider to be villains in the Star Wars universe that might not necessarily have villainy as an aspect on all versions of their cards. Anyway, though, guys, Nathan, give us the rundown a bit about how the whole aspect icons affect your deck building and your choices on what to play.
All right. So your hero is going to have two aspects on it, or your leader rather, and your base is going to have an aspect on it as well. When you go to play a card from your deck, you pay whatever cost it has printed in the top left corner. And for each aspect that that card has that you don't have on your leader or your base, you pay two more. Now, every card we've seen so far has no more than two aspects. So you might be paying two more. You might be paying four more. Most likely, you're not going to be running too many, if any, cards that don't match the aspects on your leader or your base. Now, all the cards we've seen so far have had a heroism or a villainy aspect, and one of the others, maybe one of the others. Some of them have only heroism or only villainy, but no more than one of the others. But the rules do talk about the possibility of a double vigilance card. So it does seem that there are cards that have more than one of the other aspects, and we don't know if those are also going to have the heroism or villainy ones, or if every card is going to have one of those two.
15 Peso says they're going to add other aspects, and B, you're going to have bases and or leaders with more than the two or standard one aspect.
I am not giving you my pesos because you, sir, are right. I am 99.9% sure of it, in part because the rules talk about bases having 30 health, but I saw that the 30 health is printed on the base, which means they have left room for I'm running a 25 health base that has two different aspects on it or some other game text. So yeah, that is definitely open, and I'm sure it's open on purpose.
Betcha Mos Eisley is going to have like a villainy on it.
I can see that.
You could put villainy. So what's interesting is like the that X-Wing, that three drop, has just the heroism token or the heroism aspect, but no actual colors associated with it. So I'm going to assume there's going to be villainy cards that just have that token, that aspect.
Well, we know of at least one. Two. Right. We know two. TIE Fighter.
So you could theoretically have a heroism deck with a couple TIE Fighters latched in because, you know, why not? You hire some TIE Fighters to help you out. They'll take your money.
You can play X-Wing versus TIE Fighter in your own deck.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Well, according to my friends at Google.com, a Mexican peso is currently worth, there's 17 of them to each one American dollar. So, yeah, I'll take the bet because by the time we get around to set two in 2024, yeah, I mean, of course, you know, here's my luck. Some craziness will happen and pesos will be worth a bunch of dollars and I'll owe Sugi like $120.
Yeah, let's just bet a booster pack. Play it safe.
That's it. Yeah, there you go. This booster pack cost 45 Mexican pesos. All right, so... anyway, so yeah, that's how aspects work. I think it's a really elegant system for deck building. I like the idea of having cards that have two of the same icon. So they're wanting, you know, they're really going to be hammering down on if you want to play this, you've got to have one of these present. So if you want to play your double vigilance card, you better make sure you have at least one vigilance icon hanging around. Or if you really want to play it more efficiently, go all in on vigilance.
I have to have a mea culpa here. I just realized we have seen a card that does not have a villainy or heroism aspect on it.
Yes, we have.
Vanquish has vigilance on it, but not heroism or villainy.
Yep.
So such cards will exist.
And in fact, we know they do exist. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, guys,
I was like, someone's going to have to catch this. Like, it's a neutral card in blue. Any blue player can play it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which means, it's a picture of Vader throwing Emperor Palpatine off the second Death Star or into the reactor core.
Oh my gosh. I just got that's what that was. My brain has been trying to figure out what this picture is of. Thank you.
It's actually a picture of a Warhammer 40,000 Necron.
It looks like that. It really does.
He's like lifting his hands during the rave at the lightning storm, trying to get the power from Trazen. We are totally in the wrong universe here.
My brain was not putting together. See, like, because I thought it was just Palpatine himself blasting somebody with lightning, but then I'm like, why can I see his skeleton? And why is he leaning over like this? What is happening here? Too much Taco Bell.
Oh, no.
Very bad. Very bad. Yeah. I don't care how much robot, more machine than man you are.
I don't know what's more amazing to me, the fact that Nathan figured out a piece of artwork before me, because that never happens.
It's Star Wars.
This card is a common rarity. What the heck? It seems very strong. It is
spot removal. It's so good. Like, this gets me really excited, because spot removal in color, but not faction specific. Ooh, at a common, and at five resources, you can play this on turn four. Oh boy! Now it does defeat anything but a leader, but still, like, who cares? Like, oh, and here's the scary thing: this can defeat both ground and space.
Bingo! Yes. I was about to say, I can't wait to vanquish your Executor or vanquish your Millennium Falcon.
I love the idea that
hurts so bad that your Millennium Falcon got thrown into a reactor core by Necron Boy.
Necron Boy.
Very bad.
So if the art on this picture is accurate, that would mean that at some point we'll get a Vigilance version of Anakin after he's turned back to the light side. And also Palpatine's not a leader unit.
Well, I think though what Palpatine we're gonna have is
be a leader unit. Okay. I need Palpatine to be a leader unit, and I need him to be able to look at the top card of your deck so he can like set up the advantage so he can just all he does is scry.
You pay I think resource what we're gonna have is that there is this version of Vader that is a leader, but there's gonna be another version of Vader that you can play that is a unit that's not a leader. So like this ground? Vader he does have the high ground. It's over Anakin.
Card, by the way.
The high ground?
No, I have the high ground. That better be a card.
But it won't be a card until Twilight of the Republic.
God poops. Oh, man.
Yeah, don't. Hey, let's try not to demonetize us there, Sugi.
Wait a minute. I could stop myself.
So just what I'm saying, though, is subtitles are a thing, right? So we have Luke Skywalker. Wait a minute. You guys, hold on. The Luke that we saw in the preview article has a different subtitle than this Luke. Have y'all noticed that?
I did.
I did not. Hold on.
So in the preview article, he was Luke Skywalker, faithful friend. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in the rule book, he's Luke Skywalker, impetuous student.
There has been a boo-boo in the printing of these cards.
Or a boo-boo in the printing of this PDF.
Possibly. But I'm really excited. I was sitting on that for a little bit because I was going to say, there's actually another Luke, and we can verify that thanks to this document.
But it's the same.
There's a student, and there's a faithful friend.
And faithful friend actually also has a different action on his faithful friend has a different action on his not unit side, unless I'm remembering that wrong.
Are you talking about the give a shield token to a unit you played this phase?
But impetuous student says give a shield token to a heroism unit that you played this phase.
I thought that's what the other one said.
It's too. Does the other one say that too? I thought the other one just said to a unit you played this phase.
No. You'll token to a heroism.
Okay. Yeah, all right. A good day unit. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
So most likely at some point, actually, this one says 4/7. Isn't the other one not 4/7?
They're both 4/7s.
Oh, yeah. And Vader's
I'm misremembering heavy. That. I remember Vader being one. The point is, at some point, the subtitle changed and that hasn't changed. Maybe that's why this is a leak and not an official release, because they hadn't updated that card yet.
Fake news. Yep,
it's all fake.
All fake. All right, let's go home, everybody. Good night.
Bye. All fake. This game doesn't exist. Okay. Anyway. Speaking of, oh my gosh, did you notice this card? There are like 9 new cards that are in this document compared to last episode that we had of the podcast. So, do y'all want to take a quick break? And then come back and talk about the new cards for a little bit.
Careful, we're gonna get stuck with Vader's lightsaber. It's a trap. It's a trap.
It's a trap.
It's a trap card.
Not yet, anyway.
No, this is a trap.
We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show, And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
All right, thanks very much, Kevin. Okay, guys, we got like 9 new card images in this rule book, which may have been like half the reason I was so excited to get this rule book. Sugi, do you want to jump in and pick a card to talk about first?
Yeah, after listening to that bumper, I really want to see a Enterprise D card for the space battles. We can
proton
torpedoes.
I want make a Borg
Cube. Death Star 2 run. I mean, it's Borg ship run.
I would love to see a Star Wars, Star Trek, like, you know, card game. That would be so good.
These rules could be adapted into Star Trek easily enough.
They could become a skeletal system. I could see it. I could very much see it. Okay. So I love Yoda. Yoda is one of my favorite characters of all time. In Star Wars Destiny, he was absolutely my favorite character. And he was the challenge character I brought to Worlds to try and build a Yoda deck that nobody thought was going to do well, and it did very, very well. It was absolutely a fringe deck. So when I saw Yoda, I was like, oh man, they like read my mind. This is happening. So now I'm clearly going to build a Yoda Jedi deck and then just talk at people incorrectly with grammatical, all kinds of fallacies. And then they ask me, what does your card do? It does everything. What do you mean? Well, it does everything, does it not? What does it not do? I don't know. What does it do not? I'm going to get banned from events because of how...
What is your deck trying to do? No, try not.
I do not.
Yoda, he's on page 9 of these rules.
Yeah, so he is a 3-drop unit on the ground. It's Yoda, the old master. He is unique, so you can only have one at a time. He's got the blue color and the heroism aspect. He's got 2 attack, 4 HP. Keywords are Force and Jedi. Shocking. And then his ability states, restore 2. When this unit attacks, heal 2 damage from your base. And then when defeated, choose any number of players, except whoever I don't like this turn. They each draw a card, and this is an uncommon. So... A very interesting card for a couple of reasons. One, FFG, I should say, has already discussed that this game has multiplayer right out of the gate. And the templating on this card very clearly states that any number of players, minus the person you don't like, can draw a card when Yoda is defeated. So there's a couple things you can do here. You can, anytime he attacks, if he attacks a unit, if he attacks a base, if he attacks himself, you get to heal 2 damage off of your base. Great. That's fantastic. You can also crash him into things if you need to draw a card. If you're like really low on card economy, or maybe there's just not much going down, you can use him as a, you know, missile, throw him into something bigger, have him potentially kill him. He dies as well. You draw a card. What's really fun is he is a diplomatic tool in multiplayer games, because you can say, hey, I need to draw a card. You need to draw a card. Why don't you attack me? Yoda dies, and we draw cards. Except Nathan, because I don't like him. And he's
working. Hey, look, just because my base still has 30 health.
So it's really interesting that we already have characters that help with negotiation, that are templated for multiplayer. And even in single player, like, that's a really cool ability. For 3, you get a 2/4, great body. He's in blue, which is clearly going to be more on that Jedi Force side. And his ability is pretty gnarly. Anytime he attacks anything, it's a 4-point swing. 2 damage into the thing you attack, 2 damage off of your base. If you swing into a base, it's even better because you put 2 on theirs, take 2 off of yours. And 2-4 is nothing to scoff at. He can survive a lot of really scary things because, like, your, I think Vader swings for 4 or 5. I mean, the fact that Yoda can tank that, it takes a leader to kill a Yoda. It's pretty cool. Very, very interesting.
Yeah. But note, unlike Magic the Gathering and other certain cards that have units that have power and toughness or, you know, attack and defense, hit points are a finite resource here. So if Yoda takes 2 damage, that 2 damage stays on him until he dies or you find a way to heal him. He doesn't heal up at the end of each turn like you know, in some other card games. Also, one thing we haven't talked about yet is there is kind of a quasi-mill deck strategy. And when I say mill, that means running your opponent out of cards. In this game, in Unlimited, if you have to draw a card, because at the end of each turn, you draw 2 cards automatically. Anytime you're supposed to draw a card, but you don't have any cards in your deck, you take 3 damage to your base for each card you were going to draw, but you couldn't. So I note that Yoda could possibly help facilitate a mill strategy by helping to keep your base alive while you're waiting to run them out of cards. And then he can be a death knell by making someone draw when their deck is empty and they take 3 damage to their base.
I want, Scott, at some point, I want you to do that. I would not even mind losing to you saying, well, Yoda got defeated, so I make you draw a card and that kills your base.
Yep.
Yeah, I could see restored. Well, okay. So here's the sitch on that. It depends on how high of a value restore gets because you cannot have multiple Yodas out.
Right.
So if they keep a leash on restore and keep it to maybe 1, 2, or potentially 3, it's going to be really hard to stall the game out because they're going to have to keep those characters pretty weak. And they're going to have to keep those restore values pretty low because what you really don't want to see is a turn where you swing with whatever your attack is and you restore 10 health off of your base because that is not fun for the opponent. And
yeah,
in that sense, it doesn't even matter about the mill. You just can't do anything because, oh, I deal 4 damage. I restore 8. Why am I playing this game?
Yeah. Look, just I'm because I'm still at 30 on my base. Wait, no. That explains why you didn't let me draw cards.
Restore is going to be like 2. 1 and 2 is probably going to be most common. We might see like a super rare with like a 3, but it's obviously going to be like a one of those unique characters. So they're probably, if I had to guess, if I know FFG, they're probably going to keep it so that on average, your highest restore, if you're lucky, is like 5 at a given moment.
And even that would probably be like an event that gives you restore 5 as a one-time thing.
It's probably going to cost a lot of Yoda restores 2 at 3. So if they're going to restore 3, you're probably going to cost 5. So like it's not going to happen very frequently.
And this is Yoda. He's a great Jedi Master. I don't see them giving random. Jedi who escaped the Purge has restore 3, but Yoda only has restore 2. It wouldn't make thematic sense. So
This is old Yoda. Maybe younger Yoda will have even more restore.
Okay. Well, yes, younger Yoda might have more restore.
And rave guy Yoda, hype man, jump a lump Yoda. He maybe has restore
3. Maybe, but you know then
restore 2. I bet
then that keeps you from using this Yoda. So
that's true.
But I have to say with this Yoda, I love the art. I think this is my favorite art out of all the cards we've seen so far.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Know, this is actually the first art I was like, oh, that doesn't – sorry, FFG, but that doesn't suck. I really hate some of this art. I'm so sorry.
In the first article that we saw, the announcement article – or the first look article, sorry – there was all this talk about we wanted to make sure they have their own particular art style that is all cohesive. And to me, it looked like all a bunch of old Star Wars Marvel comics. And I'm old and I like Star Wars Marvel comics. And I'm like, I'm down. This stuff that we see, the new cards that we see here, I feel like they're an entirely different style of art. I mean,
I like this Yoda young Solo holding the Sabacc cards. That's a cool piece of art. It's very, in my opinion, anime style. Oh, I loved it. I want more. See, if the cards are like that. And they have that anime kind of flair where he's got those, big eyes. He's got that smirk and you've got that backlighting. I'm down for that kind of art because that's much more in the like traditionalist style art.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, comic book art is cool. I just don't particularly like the older style of comic book art that they're sourcing.
Perfectly fine. But I feel like this Yoda and that Han Solo that you're talking about, they don't fit into that old comic book style at all.
No, they look and feel very different.
So does
the Necron Darth Vader, who's not a Necron. It looks much more like artistically... What's the word I'm looking for? Flamboyant?
Very loud. I'd go with that, yeah.
It's really loud. It's really cool. It's awesome. And I think my big problem is if you look at Tarkin's hairpiece, which I'm just going to call it, that's what the card looks like. It's so blocky. And I personally don't like that style of art because it looks kind of chunky. I know that's chunky is a good word. That's appreciated style of art for many people. And I'm not saying it's bad or it's good. For me, it just makes Tarkin look less scary and more funny. And I'm used to Tarkin dominating a scene. Like when he's on screen, you're like, oh, that's this bad. Like something's wrong. Tarkin's here. Why is he here? What is going to happen? Who's going to die? Who's about to get fired? Who's getting the pink slip? And when I see this card, it's like, Tarkin like didn't quite get his makeup on right here. What happened to you, brother? You okay?
You know which other card has artwork that makes me think more about anime? And because of the circular energy bursts on it, and I'll jump in here and talk about another new card in the rule book, the TIE LN fighter. First of all, the TIE fighter, I like that it has TIE / LN in the title, which means I can have three copies of this and three copies of, like, I don't know, a TIE defender or a TIE bomber, you know, that kind of thing. Or TIE I can advanced. Even have three TIE advanced. That's right. But this card is only one aspect. It is villainy. And it cost one. It's a space unit, has two attack, one hit point, and no game text, but the keywords are Imperial, Vehicle, and Fighter. And the artwork is the TIE Fighter screaming in out of the stars. It's got the motion lines going on so that it's all like starburst, if you will. And then it is firing its blaster cannons such that we can see little circles of green energy as it's kind of like wub, wub, wub. And it makes me think of old school Robotech style artwork when you see those circular explosion-y things going right? So I'm digging this art style as well. And I like that there's a space unit that is almost a parallel to the Death Star Stormtrooper we've talked about a lot. He's not quite as good. And I wonder why that is. It must be something to do with ground and space dichotomy and certain things are going to be happening there that don't happen in the other because they're both common cards. They both cost one. I know what it is. TIE Fighter only has one aspect icon.
That's it.
So he costs one resource and he'll only ever cost at most three resources.
Three. Yeah.
And so he has two attack and one hit point. He is a common.
You can put him in more decks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he's not going to be penalized by colors. Also, here's a thought. I know we're getting short on time, but you brought up an interesting point about the artwork being unique. Have you guys ever played Pokemon, the trading card game?
Yes, but it's been a long time.
Remember how they have multiple styles of art in Pokemon? Sometimes the 3D Pokemon, the hand-drawn Pokemon.
Sometimes Pokemon, in the same expansion.
The anime Pokemon. Yeah, there's definitely Pokemon cards that I hate the art. Like, it looks like dog poo. So the more I think about it, the more it's like, I wonder if Star Wars Unlimited is taking that approach where because they have all unique art. Now, ironically, all the art they showed in the initial batch were kind of similar. But we're starting to see a lot of different styles coming up. I'm intrigued if potentially it's going to be like Pokemon where there's going to be multiple cards in multiple art styles with multiple stats. Because you'll have like, you know, Pikachu level 10, Pikachu level 16, Pikachu level 43. And one's like three-dimensional, like computer graphics. One's hand-drawn. One's cel-shaded. One's in an action pose. And that would be actually pretty exciting for Star Wars Unlimited. Because we know there's going to be multiple Lukes, multiple Leias, multiple Vaders, and maybe the art style will differentiate.
Yeah.
So you can have cool mechanics, but you can also have cool artwork that will really solidify with certain personalities, collectors, and things that really resonate. Because like if they start doing anime style cards take my money. I will pay money. I'll pay good money for anime blinged out Han Solo, Chewbacca, Millennium Falcon, Han's blaster. Like, I'm not even kidding. If you do like cel shaded or anime style, you've got me. I'm out. I'm in so much trouble.
Sugi is going to be forking over hundreds of pesos in order to get those cards.
Hundreds of thousands.
Hundreds of thousands of pesos.
I will give you hundreds of thousands. The candy bars in exchange for cards.
I will eat those. That's actually not a bad deal. Those are expensive and hard to find.
Yeah. All right, Nathan, take it away. Talk about another card that we've seen in the rule book here.
All right, well, I'm going to cheat and talk about two because, as you mentioned, we're short on time. I'm going to talk about the Command Center and the Administrator's Tower. So we got to see a couple of bases. Both of these bases have 30 hit points. The Command Center is located on the Death Star and gives you the officer or the command aspect, the green one. And the Administrator's Tower gives you the cunning aspect, also has 30 hit points, and is on Cloud City. I find these interesting because they specify where they're at. So you could have cards later on that care about where your base is. So that's one way they could differentiate. You know, maybe I'm using the Command Center and Scott's using the Death Star 2 Command Center. And you know, that might give us a little differentiation, even if both of our cards just give us the same aspect. We don't really have room to put game text on these, but they could always come up with other ones that squeeze the picture a little bit to give us some game text. Or they may just give us ones that have multiple aspects for a lower health total. So there's possibilities here, but the ones we've seen so far are very basic, 30 hit points, one aspect.
Here's a tinfoil question. Do you think there will be upgrades for bases?
Yes.
Not in the base set.
Ooh, I think there might be in the base set.
Do you guys think we'll see bases that have some kind of text or icons in the little boxes that are to the left and right of the location on the base? Like, it looks perfect.
No, I think they would screw the artwork up and they'd actually have a literal text box.
Yeah. Okay. They might add a keyword in there for some things, but then I question why wouldn't the Death Star have a keyword or Cloud City? Like, they could have come up with keywords for those.
Probably because they're like super fundamental bases in the starter set. And they can eventually add more mechanically complex options.
Death Star doesn't even have Imperial on it. So I don't think we'll see Imperial or Rebel or anything like that. But yeah, these do seem like the most basic of possible bases. I don't think we'll ever see one that's greater than 30 hit points.
Oh, I do note that we will.
I do note that each of these is a common card at rarity as well. So they're not starter cards, if you will.
I bet you money will see a bigger base, but it doesn't have an icon. So your leader only provides two.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Remember, that could work.
Your base is a resource in multiple fashions. So it provides an aspect. So they could easily say, cool, here's a 40 health base. No aspect. It's just gray, neutral. So now you have to use your leader. And basically, it's a one color deck because you have villainy and let's see, Vader's red. So aggression. So anything outside of color, you got to pay for it. But your base gets an extra 10 health.
Interesting. Yeah, that could work.
Because I can see the inverse where the base has less health and more aspects.
Yeah, I have 20 health, but I have both cunning and officer.
Yeah, so your your deck can have three colors plus your, essentially I'm calling them affiliations. You have, you know, good guys, bad guys.
Or not even necessarily three colors, but if you have some of those double aspect cards in your deck.
That wouldn't count. If you have one blue, it covers both of the blue aspects.
No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't do that.
Right, if you're paying out of cost. But if you're in color, it
shouldn't. If the card in your deck has multiple of the same aspect, you need to have multiple of that aspect on your leader and base to avoid the penalty.
Yeah. So whatever crazy double blue card there is, you need to have two blue icons.
Oh yeah. Aspect. They actually have that as an example.
Yeah. That is the example, which tells me there probably is a double blue in the set.
There has to be.
Yeah. Okay, well, like Nathan said, we're running out of time here, so I'm going to jump ahead and talk about two cards myself. One of them we've already talked a whole lot about, Death Star Stormtrooper. He is cost one, but he requires aggression and villainy as his aspect icons, but he does have three attack and one hit point, no game text, Imperial and Trooper as the keywords, and he is a common ground unit. So yeah, I think he's going to be a early game defining card in the first set. Now, maybe we're wrong and this guy is actually going to end up being garbage, but right now he looks really strong.
It'll depend on how much direct damage stuff there is.
Yeah.
But you know,
or God forbid AOE. I'm going to throw my thermal detonator into the ground arena and everybody takes one damage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, seeing the tie L in makes me wonder if there's going to be a regular stormtrooper that only has a villainy aspect and is a 2/1.
Yeah.
Probably.
And this dude is more like a specialized stormtrooper.
Yeah.
And the other card, you could have an officer
that is also 3/1.
Yeah. And the other card I want to talk about that is on the page 9 with Yoda here is the Alliance X-Wing. Really good looking card, in my opinion. It's a great illustration of an X-Wing. It almost has a glowy effect in its drawing here.
Much different style than the Yoda.
Different style than the TIE Fighter as well.
Yeah.
And it has two cost. It is only one aspect, though, heroism. And it has two attack, three hit points. Rebel vehicle fighter and no game text, but also a common card. So I love the idea that we will have plenty of X-Wings and TIE fighters to throw at each other in various games.
And this is what Rarity is actually supposed to do. It's not supposed to be about how powerful the card is. It's supposed to be about how complicated the card is. So having cards that have no game text that are commons is a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Sugi, I know you want to talk about this Necron. Darth Vader on page 10 here. We've got Vanquish as a card. So take it away.
So this is what we lovingly call targeted removal, spot removal. It's a 5-drop event in blue, and it just has the simplest ability you could possibly type: defeat a non-leader unit. So anyone who is not a leader can be killed, both on ground, both on space. And that's it. It's a common card. This is a card you do not want to bench. Please, for the love of God, do not bench this card. Turn one. This is what we call an answer to a threat. So if your opponent has a big thing you just can't handle, you pay 5 resources and you handle it. So this is one of those weird scenarios where you see a 5-drop in your hand early game. You're like, okay, I bench this immediately. No. You keep that.
Unless you're playing against somebody, you're like, I've played against you 12 times, and every time you bring the same deck that has no big units because you're just running aggro. You know, in that sense, it's kind of a meta card. But the meta is, do you have a really good unit? And most decks will.
How much you want to bet they're sideboarding in between rounds?
I hope so. And I hope that rounds are matches. 12 bases. And I hope that when you play at tournaments, it's best 2 out of 3 or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah, better be best 2 out of 3.
Yeah, if you can finish a game in 7 minutes, and I know that was on the low end, but they still said 20 was kind of on the higher end. Yeah, it better be 2 out of 3.
Yeah, after looking at this game, I get the feeling like you're probably done at 10 to 12. There's not that much going on.
Right.
So this card, Vanquish, Sugi, I know you played Legend of the Five Rings LCG a bit. This is Assassinate. You keep it. It's worth the cost of doing the thing and crushing their best unit.
Yeah.
Throw the Emperor down the reactor shaft.
You very well may see this out of color. Mm-hmm. Now, I'd still pay 7 to kill anything in the game.
My only question of playing it out of color is, will games last enough rounds to get to where you're paying 7?
It's a good question. If you're playing a ramp deck, probably don't care.
True.
It depends on the speed of the game. It depends on a lot of things, but the card is so good.
Yeah, I'm not ruling out the possibility of playing it out of color. Especially because it only one aspect. So it's no matter what color, it's no more than 7.
Yeah, it'll never be above 7. And I'm positive there's ways to cheat. I am positive. I'm 100% positive there will be upgrades that do not do anything except give you aspects. You slap it on a character, and this character now has this additional aspect. So,
because those would be super useful in draft.
Yep. I wouldn't be surprised if there's like a 2 or 3 sealed drop that says this character now.
So you play that on your leader?
No. You play on whatever you want. You can play on a character. It has to be a unit on
the battlefield. So what would be the benefit of giving a unit on the battlefield an aspect?
Because now you have... I guess it would have to be on leader.
Yeah. Leader or base.
Or base. Yeah, you did say there's a possibility of upgrades on bases.
Yes, so you could slap so that on could the work. Base, and the base now produces, you know, a blue, and your vanquishes are now 5.
We built a Jedi temple on Jedha, and now in addition to cunning, it gives us vigilance.
Yeah.
It's like in Decipher's Wars TCG encampments. You didn't do anything with it, but tuck it under an existing location, and it gave the icon from that encampment to the existing location.
Yeah,
that totally makes sense. Yeah, that's absolutely going to happen. I'm going to build this moisture farm on Cloud City, etc.
Well,
because there's not enough moisture in the clouds.
Yep.
Yeah, anyways, the next card we want to look at is Vader's lightsaber.
No, that's what.
Yes, I'm so excited. I got my lightsaber wish. You play lightsabers as cards in this game. You give them to somebody like you did in the old Decipher CCG, where you hand somebody a weapon. And if you're the person,
just says Scott's lightsaber, it's not.
That's right. And if you're the person that is named on the lightsaber, you get a bonus effect. So in this case, Vader's lightsaber is a 2-cost upgrade. The first upgrade we've seen. It has 2 aspect icons, aggression and villainy, because it's Vader's lightsaber. It's unique, so that's pretty cool. Game text, attached to a non-vehicle unit. When played, if attached unit is Darth Vader, you may deal 4 damage to a ground unit. I really would have liked to have seen 4 damage to a unit, because I love the idea of him throwing it into space, but that would probably be OP.
I thought you specifically said you didn't want to see ground units.
I did. It would be terribly OP and unflavorful. Anyway, but it gets bonus power and bonus hit points. So +3 power and +1 hit point. So if you give this to Daddy Vader, he is going to be an 8-9.
The one thing I don't like about this card is it says attached to a non-vehicle unit. I wish it said non-vehicle ground unit, because I assume most space units are going to be vehicles, but this does mean that we can't really have like the space slug or the Pergil as non-vehicle space units, or they can use lightsabers.
Oh God. Now I want to go back and look at the,
or X-Wing. They just put text on a card saying you cannot put upgrades on this card, on this unit.
Yeah. Just
to protect yourselves.
Maybe.
Okay, yeah, so far both the X-Wing and the TIE Fighter we've seen do have the vehicle keyword.
Those make sense.
If they whiffed on that and then an X-Wing or a TIE Fighter did not have vehicle, it's like, I guess I'm just going to give Darth Vader's lightsaber to this TIE Fighter. Boy, golly, now he's a 2-3-2. He's a 6-3.
Wow. Just go up to next somebody, roll down the window. Excuse me. Yeah.
Actually,
I'm starting
Andor, where that guy like extended the lightsabers on the side of the ship and then it started spinning it.
Yes.
I guess you
could. I thought of those more. I thought of those more on Luthen's ship, not as lightsabers, but more like modified Death Star beams or the beam from the clone trooper. Lightsabers. Yeah, but it reminded me more of the beam from the clone trooper cannon that's on the gunship that the clones have in Attack of the Clones.
Oh man, gunships will be in here. Oh,
yes.
Okay.
And they cannot use Vader's lightsaber because they're vehicles.
My hopes and dreams.
You know who can use Vader's lightsaber though? Is Leia? That freaking Death Star stormtrooper? Yes, Leia can. Tarkin can. That freaking Death Star stormtrooper can get this on the second turn, and he'll be 6-2.
You're fired. Don't tell people that.
Oh, but I do like the design of the card. We were talking about tucking cards under other cards. At the bottom of the card is where the plus three power and plus one hit point are. But also,
so that you can just put it right underneath and you can see. It even has the name twice.
Yes, you can see the name still. The name is down there, and so are the keywords. The traits, I should say. Traits. Item, weapon, lightsaber.
Disbelief in this game. I'm not opposed to it, but I do think it's funny because I'd rather have the two stormtroopers than the 1-6-2 because you could split damage in different directions.
Generally, yeah, that would be better. But it's I still love the idea of a stormtrooper walking around the Death Star and going, hey, what is this?
Yeah, right.
But yeah, again, it's
Tarkin Vader saber is going to be hilarious. Like,
yep. I mean, it's like when Din Djarin tries to use the darksaber. He's not that good at it, but he can still do stuff. Or Han Solo.
Him the lightsaber. That's why he got choked out.
Yep.
He's been playing with Darth Vader's toys.
We have one more new card to discuss. I think it's only one. We're only going to do one because we've got to end this episode. Nathan, talk about the Consular Security Force, which is revealed on page 13.
Yes, so this one is another card that has no text. It is just stats. It is a four-cost card with the Vigilance and Heroism aspects and is 3 attack and 4 7 hit points. So this kind of gives us a baseline for what ground units with no game text should have. 3-7 for 4. At least if you've got two aspects.
In the quick start rules, they show that this Consular Security Force, also if you look at page 13, it actually says Consular Security FOS, F-O-C-E. There's a mistype there. But in the movie,
details.
These boys drop like flies to stormtroopers, and in the demo of how to fight, they kill a stormtrooper, and I feel like that is a thematic boo-boo, because, like, don't get me wrong, a 4-7 is, a 3-7 is ridiculous for 4.
But I would point out, the stormtroopers that kill these dudes are not Death Star stormtroopers. They are clearly
They're the 501st, yeah. Which I'm hoping, well, let's be honest, we're all going to play a Captain Rex deck when it comes out. Like, come on.
Yeah, we are.
We're playing Captain Rex. He's going to be in red. And by golly, I hope that there's... Now, this is also reaching, and I'll shut up after this because we want to go home and eat food. But I would hope that we have dual leader opportunities. So you could do like Captain Rex and Anakin. That would be sweet because then you could have blue on Rex, red on Annie.
I want team games. I want me and Nathan to be able to team up against Sugi and a teammate of his choice. And that's how we do our combo leader things. And, you know, Nathan's got Captain Rex and I've got Ahsoka. And we're ready to take down whoever Sugi and his partner have.
Mill deck. Two mill decks.
Yes, it'd be Unkar Plutt and I don't know, Jabba.
I need Jabba to be like a 0-10. Like,
We know that there's artwork with Jabba on it. They did show that
artwork. I think he's going to be a leader unit. I think he'll be able to have a Jabba deck. Yeah.
I would love to see a Jabba control deck. Please.
Yeah.
Give me.
So this is one point about the aspects. We've only seen command and aggression paired with villainy, and we've only seen vigilance and cunning paired with heroism. But characters like Jabba, I would expect to be cunning villainy.
Yeah.
So I think the reason we've seen them that way is because we've seen primarily, if not exclusively, cards from the starters that are built that way.
Yeah.
So I expect to see all four of the others paired with heroism and villainy.
Oh, yeah.
And Jabba's one of the reasons why.
Jabba's got to be cunning.
Yeah. Fearless and inventive.
My kind of scum. I also want that Mos Eisley base because I want it to have villainy as a thing. And then I can be all, you will never hide a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
That just means we need a scum aspect too.
There has to be more in the pipeline. Usually when you see colors like this, there's something else.
I would expect like two more, especially because heroism and villainy seem set apart. They're almost not the same as the other four colors. and you'd expect five or six colors. Five Magic has five, but a lot of things have six.
Yeah. I'm excited.
Looks all right. Good. It looks very great. I'm so happy that we got this quick start rule, and we're going to go ahead and start wrapping it up there. Sugi, thanks so much for joining us again. Well, we will pester you some more in the future when we get more information about Star Wars Unlimited.
Careful, we might get another leak, and I have to come back next week.
I know.
I mean, right? I'm not going to argue.
Yeah.
Well, if you all know right, how to cause them.
Yes, go ahead and start poking holes in more things to make leaks. Good times. Okay, well, so yes, if you guys have been enjoying the podcast, please look for us out there on the internet. You can find us at the FPNet master feed, which is at fpnet.podbean.com, or find us on the FPNet on the Podbean app. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Google Play. On Facebook, you can check us out. What? Yes.
Can I find you guys at Costco?
Sure.
I don't have
if you look hard enough. Nathan's more of a Sam's Club guy.
Yeah. Oh,
Nathan's hot dogs, huh?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yep. You can also find us on Facebook at the What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast Facebook group, or send me an email, guys. I'm old enough that I still use email. Please email me between episodes at whatapieceofjunkpod@gmail.com. Kevin does run our Twitter at WhatWars. And you can find us on Instagram under the Fandom Podcast Network. And please leave us some good reviews out there on the Apple Podcasts or any other places that you leave reviews for shows. We really appreciate that. And we very much want to thank all of you for joining us on this episode. Please remember to always respect each other. And of course, always respect each other's fandom. All right, Nathan, punch it.